Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Thank you, Patrick. It's alive. Oh, all right. As most of us know, if you've been paying attention to the news at all, there have been quite a few high-profile departures, shall we call them, in recent weeks, like Robin Williams and Lauren Bacall and Michael Brown in Ferguson, and people for all sorts of different reasons. We won't deal with that right now. And also, if you're in this New Thought community here in Atlanta, or have been for a while, there have been a lot of people recently here. Marcia Briscoe, Jesse Vicks, Judy Frost, a number of people that some of you may not know, but many of us knew very, very well. So when this tends to happen, I know at least a few of you, I know I do, start to think about our own mortality. You know, we always seem to do that. But instead of talking about death and dying today, I decided to alter the conversation a little bit. You see, what we usually talk about in a spiritual forum like this one is how to deal with death, or what we call transition from this life to the next, in a healthy and intelligent way. We talk about how we've only got so many years on the planet in this physical body, and none of us knows how many we have, but that's okay, because after we leave here, we'll probably have some kind of an afterlife or something to keep us occupied, and we may even get to see all our loved ones who went before. That's kind of the way we were raised. And the good news is, unless we've done something really, really, really bad, it probably won't be any worse than this, you know, which is something good to say. And it may even be a whole lot better. Those are kind of comforting thoughts for some of us. But then again, there are a lot of people, including some of you here, I have no doubt, who don't believe that there is an afterlife. So people who believe there isn't an afterlife don't have that to look forward to, but they also don't have to worry about being punished after they die. So I guess it all evens out. Now, personally, the way I like to look at it is, and I wanted to say this up front so you know where I stand, if this thing that we call physical death and whatever comes after it, if anything, because we really don't know, okay, is something that we are all going to experience after an average lifetime of 85 years or so, and if any of you are over 85, I apologize, but you're beating the average, that's good. Which is certainly the way it appears. You know, most people leave after a certain period of time, some more, some less. And if that's the way it really is, then compared to all of eternity, the trillions and trillions of eons, this life we are living right now is just a drop in the bucket in the big scheme of things. So even if we really are obsessed with all the stuff that happens to us from day to day, as most people are, we all might think about giving at least a little thought to how the life that we are living now relates to the much longer life that we are probably going to be experiencing after we die. Not because of what may be in store for us in terms of rewards or punishment, but because of how what we are creating now may affect things in the future, in what we call the hereafter. All right? Some people say as you get older, that's what you do. You start going into rooms going, what was I here after? I'm trying to, but we're not talking about that. This is different. Okay. Maybe we need to ask ourselves questions like, could we be doing more while we're here than we've been doing? That's not a bad question. Should we be doing things in our life differently? Or should we worry about anything at all? Does it matter? I've got a special bulletin board at home, and I put special cards and special cartoons, and there was one I've had for years, and it's a very jolly-looking god, sort of, you know, long white beard, the traditional one, leaning on a podium at the pearly gates talking to this little nerdy guy, and the caption is, no, that's not a sin either. My goodness, you must have worried yourself to death, you know? It's kind of cute, you know? Should we worry about anything? Does any of it matter, you know? But what about, when you get into a teaching like this, what about all these thoughts that are constantly going through my mind and all these emotions that are going through my heart and my soul and my spirit? How does what I think and feel now, today, affect what I am going to be when I don't have a physical body anymore? Or is what I think and feel now completely irrelevant? Now, I don't know about you, but when it comes to the spiritual component of my life, those are the kind of things that I think about. Now, one possibility that intrigues me is a question that human beings have been asking about for a long, long time, and that is this question of actually not dying, of actual physical immortality. You know, whether we human beings manage to extend our lifetime either indefinitely or a lot longer than it is now. And in most cases, this idea comes out of a fear of death, a fear of the unknown, which is normal. But even if they won't admit it publicly, a lot of people are kind of wondering in the back of their mind, they read the articles and that, is immortality something that could really happen, or is it just a theoretical discussion or some New Age psychobabble being pursued by some very strange characters? In other words, in a real, practical, visible, measurable way, and in the foreseeable future, that makes it very relevant, will we be capable of using our intelligence and our imagination and the laws of science and the laws of nature to figure out how we can live effectively forever? And even more important, for those of us who are trying to look at the bigger picture, the spiritual picture, would that be a good thing, or would it create more problems than it solves? You see, once we get into this kind of a teaching, once we get away from our traditional baptism, Judaism, Catholicism, whatever it happens to be, once our spiritual search turns away from all the traditional priorities like trying to please God or trying to get into heaven and stay out of hell, and spirituality becomes a much more immediate and practical part of our life, these are now the questions that we have to think about. So this morning, let's talk about something that stretches our imagination a little bit, something that could have a profound effect on the way we live in this physical material world. Or if not us, because maybe we were born a little bit too soon, then our children, our grandchildren, our nieces, our nephews, and everybody else who is born after us. Now, as I sometimes do when I'm writing a talk like this one that has a lot of different moving parts to it, on Thursday or Friday afternoon, I get on the internet and I Googled, in this case, the words physical immortality. Okay, pretty straightforward. How many hits you think I got? Over a million? How many people think over a million? 2 million? Over 3 million? 3,990,000 hits from those two words. Very, very interesting. And the first website on the list that wasn't an advertisement, you know, the very first website, immediately caught my eye because it was for an organization who shall remain nameless because they have gotten on the bad side of the government and the IRS in the last year or so. And this organization's goal is to promote greatly extended lifespans and whose mission, I love this, is to conquer the blight of involuntary death. Isn't that cool? To conquer the blight of involuntary death. So I went to their bylaws, figured that was interesting. And one of the first things I saw was a procedure on how to fill unexpected vacancies on their board of trustees. And I found myself wondering, what happened to create that vacancy if these people are immortal? Did somebody die? And if you died, you probably didn't belong on the board of an organization that promoted immortality, okay? Now, anyway, if you're interested, get on whatever search engine you use and see what you can find. If nothing else, it is very entertaining. Now, whether or not this kind of research interests you, the logic of it is very, very interesting. Because apparently people who are seeking actual physical immortality, for the most part, don't believe that there is anything after we die. Isn't that interesting? They don't believe there's anything after they die. No heaven, no hell, no reincarnation, nothing. Total oblivion. So the best alternative that they can see, since we're already here and we're already aware and we're already conscious and we have a life, is to figure out how to stay here as long as possible, which makes perfect sense in a weird sort of way. Now, they also point out the fact, this is one of their big arguments, that in any given year, on average, based on an 85-year lifespan and 7 billion people on the planet, if you just work out the numbers, okay, approximately 82 million people die worldwide every single year, which is an incredible loss of knowledge and information and experience. So they say, these life researchers say, if we live forever, if people live forever, maybe the world could benefit from all the things that these people have to offer. Now, on the other side of this, from the critics, if nobody died, then the population problem would have to be dealt with, including food, living space, garbage disposal, and a lot of other things. But they maintain that if you get enough smart 500, 1,000, 2,000-year-old people in a room together, okay, with their long-term perspective, they could probably come up with a lot of the answers that we need. That's the theory. Okay, I'm not sure it's true, but it's possible. Anyway, that's one of their key arguments in favor of it. We have to recognize that different people look at the concept of immortality in different ways, and as a result, they search for different kinds of answers. First and foremost, there's the religious perspective, which we're all familiar with from the way we were raised, and that talks about the soul living forever. A traditional Christian or Catholic or Muslim sees death as a doorway to another life in a special place where they hope to find eternal happiness. So people who think this way may not even like the idea of living forever in this world, in this body, because it prevents them from getting to heaven. And even worse, it prevents the people they don't like from going to hell. They don't like that part either, okay? So that's one perspective. Then there's the medical viewpoint. A medical researcher seeks immortality or an extended lifespan by looking for a way to heal or to prevent diseases and to restore damaged organs and body tissues, or maybe even to replace them, which is the $6 million man approach, the bionic approach. The scientist looks for a way to stop the aging process through genetic manipulation. They're doing a lot of that now. Some specialized scientists, like the cryogenesis, they're looking for a way to freeze people and put them into storage until a healing for the illness they have is invented. Ted Williams, the baseball player, is going through that right now. The nutritionist, there's another one, sees the answer in eating healthy foods and taking dietary supplements while not eating unhealthy foods like steak or chocolate or ice cream and not drinking alcohol. You may not live longer, but it'll feel like it. Anyway, there are a lot of different approaches. Looking back in history, even some of the earliest cultures even went beyond the idea of seeing immortality as just something that happened to the soul or the spirit. They included the body, like the Egyptians, especially the priests and the pharaohs and the wealthy Egyptians early on. They tried very hard to live forever, and when their efforts failed, as they always seem to do, okay, they still went so far as to put food and gold and slaves and concubines inside the pyramids so that they would have company in the next life. And they preserved their own bodies so well that some of them are even around today as mummies and don't look too bad compared to what some people I've seen. All right. But today, with all of the rapid advances that we're making in genetics and robotics and computers, and nanotechnology, and medicine, the question of living forever, or living for a long, long time, has moved from the sacred temples where it was once studied by priests and magicians to the laboratories, where now it's studied by doctors and scientists with incredible tools at their disposal. Now, how many of you have seen the movie Transcendence with Johnny Depp? If you haven't seen it, it was kind of a not very well-known movie. Johnny Depp does some of these offbeats things, but it's incredibly interesting, the questions that it brings up about mortality. And I won't tell you why, because if I even told you the plot, it would be a spoiler, but trust me, I highly recommend, go ahead, you can get it on pay-per-view, all right? Now, a metaphysical writer, a current last 10 years metaphysical writer, not a scientist, a spiritual writer by the name of David Sunfellow, I'm not familiar with him, but he put it this way. He said, one of the biggest obstacles that humankind has faced is death. We all grow old and die. Now, however, he says, even this supposedly insurmountable barrier is crumbling, and in its wake we are likely to see, this is the good part, yet another remarkable leap in human development. I think he's right. He may be right. Now, lest you think this is impossible or a little far-fetched, these leaps in human development have happened many, many times throughout history. Look at aviation. At one point, nobody believed that people could fly, let alone go to the moon Now we've done it all. 75 years ago, most reputable scientists didn't believe we could ever unlock the energy in the atom, and now we use it for electricity to power huge cities. We do all of these things that nobody thought we could do. How? How do we do it? Not through some accidental discovery of some secret of nature, but instead through a shift in consciousness brought about by a conscious and deliberate desire to expand our knowledge about life and the world around us. So if you think about it, from a spiritual perspective, these quantum leaps forward that humanity has taken and continues to take time and time again are actual physical demonstrations of what Dr. Ernest Holmes says in the very beginning of his book, The Science of Mind: what mind can conceive, man can achieve. Whatever we can conceive, we can achieve. Now, let me be clear. We are not talking here about adding on a few years here or there. We're talking about the possibility of adding decades or even centuries to our life, which, no doubt, is a game changer. Now, the futurists, that's another group that looks at this, the effects of this, they tell us that the level of knowledge in the world is doubling every 18 months. So, as long as the level of stupidity doesn't rise just as fast, all right, so we destroy ourselves, we may indeed be on the verge of creating not only a very different kind of world, but also creating a lot more time for ourselves to either fix our problems or to make them worse. To make them worse, which is an important part of the equation that we need to consider, because it could go either way. The choice, as always, is ours. Now, most scientists say the question is not whether or not this will happen, but when. And I agree with that. But an even bigger question is, a spiritual question is, are we ready for it? Are we ready for it? I mean, for some people, living an extra 200 or 300 years would be more of a curse than a blessing. It could be real similar to what happens to a lot of lottery winners. Instead of given a bunch of years, they are given tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, and they receive so much of it so fast that in a year or less, their life is in shambles. They're bankrupt. A lot of them are in jail. Their relationships are poisoned. Their health is destroyed. They're out of work. They're broke after being handed tens of millions of dollars with no responsibility and no strings attached. It happens all the time. Now, the reason this happens, of course, is in perfect harmony with the way the universe works. These people did not have a consciousness of prosperity before they got the money, so why would we think they would have a consciousness of prosperity after they got the money? Now, the same thing happens in other areas of our life. A lot of people who undergo serious medical intervention to deal with a major health crisis, like a heart problem or whatever it happens to be, end up in the hospital less than a year later with the same problem or worse. They do. The statistics play it out. Why? Because medicine does not solve the core problem. You see, medicine does not heal. Did you know that? Surgery does not heal. They only correct a condition. They only cure a symptom. Only a change in consciousness can heal us for good. That's why Ernest Holmes once said, the thing that makes us sick is the thing that makes us well. It's consciousness. It's all consciousness. Now, it's the same with our job or with our relationships. Our consciousness has to change first, and a lot of people forget this, it has to remain changed. You can't change it and then go back. You change it and it has to remain changed in order for something new and better to not only show up in our life, but to stay there and grow. Now, how does this apply to living forever? One of my favorite quotes of all time, and I got to tell you, I got books, a shelf of quotes, and I love reading through them, but it's by a woman writer by the name of Susan Ertz, E-R-T-Z, I'm not familiar with this, and she says this. She says, millions of people yearn for immortality who don't know what to do with themselves on a rainy Sunday afternoon. Ooh, that's too true to be funny. That's, you know. What she's saying is, not only can most people not conceive of having a greater number of years in which to enjoy and to practice this thing called life, most of us wouldn't know what to do with the extra time even if we had it, okay? Oh boy, more Seinfeld or Big Bang Theory reruns. Wow, I've seen that, all right. More 10 million solitaire games, Sudoku games on my computer, whatever it is. It's like Stephen Wright, you know that comedian, the real deadpan guy, kind of funny. He says, I intend to live forever. So far, so good. Kind of good. I like that. We're not taking it seriously. We don't take it seriously. I believe the main reason we have not yet developed the ability to live a lot longer is because we don't yet have the consciousness to live forever. But that's okay, because something inside of us knows that we aren't ready yet for that leap in human development. I mean, first we need to figure out a few other things, like how to get along with one another and how to take care of the planet and all that stuff. I mean, having a body capable of living 1,000 years will not help us if we're still killing each other in wars or if we don't have any clean water to drink or clean air to breathe. So our next best step may be, ought to be, for us to learn how to create a world and how to create a society that we would all actually want to live in for an extended period of time. And not just the people in the U.S. or in the Western world, but all, or the wealthy people, but all people everywhere. Now, I realize that not everybody has the same opinion about this. We could all get together at a party and have a very lively theoretical conversation. Some of you are going to talk about it over brunch, about who wants to live forever and who doesn't. I could ask for a raise of hands. How many people would like to live an extra 1,000 years? Let me ask. Very interesting. How many would not? No in between. Very interesting, okay? The discussion is what's interesting when you talk about it. Whichever side we're on, we'd all have our own perfectly valid reasons for our choice. And those reasons are based on our own deepest beliefs, not about life or immortality, but our own beliefs about God, about ourselves, and about the kind of world we expect to exist in the future. That's what all our beliefs are always based on. But a theoretical discussion is just that, okay? There's nothing to lose when we're just quibbling around at brunch or at a party. It would be a much more powerful and interesting discussion and require a lot more deep thinking and inner work if we were actually making the choice whether we wanted to live 1,000 years or only 90, say. I mean, think about it. What if we were actually signing a contract with God? Now, all the stories have people signing a contract with the devil, but let's say we were signing a contract with God or choosing to have a medical procedure, we can make it more pragmatic, with a very narrow window of opportunity. And, let's throw this into the mix, what if we were 85 years old when we were asked, or 89 years old when we were asked to make our decision whether we wanted to die at 90 or 1,090? Makes it a little more interesting, doesn't it? Our choice would depend, probably, upon our state of health and our state of mind at the time. I mean, the truth is, let's be honest, no one who is healthy and happy and loving their life wants to die. Nobody, all right? So the point of teachings like this one is to learn how to be healthy and fulfilled and prosperous and creative and curious and loving and loved all the time. Or at least most of the time, so that if the opportunity comes to live a longer life, if it ever presents itself, whether planned or unplanned, we will be ready. That way, instead of worrying about living forever, we can begin to put our mental and our emotional and our physical and our spiritual energy into what I like to call forever living. Slightly different, which is the constant enjoyment of whatever life we have, rather than living forever, which may or may not be something we actually enjoy. You get the difference between the two? All right. So that requires us, instead of thinking about life as something limited by death, to think about what life means to us no matter how long we live in this form or any other. It's not about how long we live, it's about how we are living. We've heard that. What's that old saying? It's not the years in your life, it's the life in your years. That's the bumper sticker and the t-shirt. It's a great statement. You see, living does not just mean being alive. A turnip is alive, you know? A jellyfish is alive. Living, living, and by that I mean really living in the way we should all want to do it, means much, much, much more. It means creating and being and connecting and feeling and thinking and laughing and crying and singing and dancing and loving and a thousand other things. That's what living means. No, not all at once, and no, not all the time. But there has to be continuity. There has to be an ongoing, continuous expression of life forever expanding, like we talk about in the Declaration of Principles, or life constantly unfolding, so we don't have to worry about running out of things to enjoy. And that kind of living can only come from one place, and that is in here. It can only come from within. We can't just sit around and wait for interesting and fun things to happen, and we can't wait for the world to entertain us. We can't just sit around and do that. Now, James Dean, not Jimmy Dean the sausage guy, I mean James Dean the actor, okay, who died at the ripe old age of, how old, Manning, you remember? 24, there you go. He once made the very interesting and very profound statement, dream as if you'll live forever, and live as if you'll die tomorrow. Very good. Isn't that great for a 24-year-old or whatever age he was? That's pretty impressive. That's pretty good advice. When we accept completely, without being worried or afraid, that we're all going to be leaving this plane of existence at some unknown moment for parts unknown, which we all are, then we can stop worrying about it. We can stop worrying about it. And if we dream as if we'll live forever, we can spend every moment of our life moving towards our dreams and creating our dreams, playing with our dreams, making them bigger, knowing that we're going to be able to do the same thing in the next life just as well as this one, maybe even with bigger dreams. But meanwhile, we can enjoy ourselves in what Eckhart Tolle calls the eternal now in the book, The Power of Now. That is forever living. Now, finally, for those of you who are interested in Ernest Holmes' opinion on immortality, you can go to the chapter called Immortality. It's one of my favorites in the book, chapter 23 in The Science of Mind. And he says it is his belief that we continue after physical death in much the same way that we're living now, only with a greater understanding of how life works. And I like that. But I also like what Dr. Raymond Charles Barker, one of my favorite teachers, says. He said, nobody improves by dying. It's a great statement. Nobody improves by dying. So whatever level of consciousness we develop while we're here, that's going with us to the hereafter. You don't get transformed just because you cross over. Okay, very interesting. Dr. Holmes says, it would seem then that we have a spiritual body now and need not die to receive one. There's that oneness thing. We're the physical and the spiritual all together. He says, we now remember the past, and we have outlived many physical bodies during this life because our body is constantly transforming. So, he says, it looks as if we are already immortal and do not need to die to take on immortality. Finally, he says, if there are many planes of life and consciousness, as we firmly believe, perhaps we only die from one plane to another, from one plane to another. Now, we talk about oneness here. I'm not sure we always understand what we're talking about, but we talk about oneness. We say everything is God, not just this body or this physical world, but everything. Everything. And that means our physical body does not have to be either absorbed by the physical world or overcome it. Instead, as we develop a greater understanding of life, the appearance of separation that we call death will disappear, and we can actually begin to see and experience both the physical and the spiritual elements of our own body and the world as a single oneness entity that they've always been. So, as for me, I'll tell you this. I've got more books on my list than I can get to in 1,000 years. Anybody else? Already. I know David does. Same thing. And there are more places I want to go, more things I want to do, and more people I want to meet than I can do in probably 10,000 years if I start making a list. I don't want to watch Star Trek anymore. I want to live it. I want to live it, right? Okay? And I'd just as soon not do it alone. In fact, I would like to have some really interesting people around that I have known for hundreds of years who also want to see what the world is like and what we can create out of what we have. But before we do all of that, we got some work to do, getting our lives and the world in a lot better shape than they are now. So now's a good time to get started. And in case you haven't figured it out, this is a great place to start. So this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Okay. Thank you. All right. A lot to think about. Might have tweaked a little something in a few of you anyway. So let's just take a few moments in silence. Take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's know this. The universe is one. Life is one. All things, all people, all places, all ideas, all feelings, all dreams, all of it, one. Completely interconnected. All being expressed in an infinite variety of ways. And I am one of those ways. I am as central to the life in the universe as anyone or anything ever was or ever will be. My life did not begin at the moment I was born, and it will not end at the moment that I physically die. Life is an ongoing process, and I am one with that process. So I know that the experience that I have now, even looking at it from day to day, that this life experience is a growth opportunity that will go on and on and on. I do not feel the pressure of time pushing at me because the years go by. I do not feel the pressure of forcing myself to do what I think I'm supposed to do or what people tell me to do. I feel freedom. I feel the freedom to express life, to be life, to know life, to experience life in greater and greater ways. So in order to do this, I open myself. I open my eyes, I open my ears, I open my heart, and I open my mind. And as I open all of these things, I do not see more of life, I become more of life. I allow the greater idea of life in me to emerge from me and connect with itself everywhere I go. So the deepness that I feel, the loving presence I feel and share with other people that I meet, the places that I go, I feel like I belong. The things that I do, I know that they are coming from a consciousness of growth and love and joy. And I live my life in a tremendous way. So at that point in time, whether I know when it's coming or not, I know that when I make my transition from this life, as I step through the door, move through the curtain, drift down the river, however it happens in consciousness, I know that I am the same person there that I am here. Only now I know something more. I leave no one behind because I carry the thoughts and the love for those in my life in my heart. It never leaves me. And I am not gone because my presence is in their heart. So as I recognize this, I honor life. I do not fear death. And I give thanks simply for being here. This is my truth. I'm deeply grateful for this awareness, for the freedom to think and believe what I understand is a greater truth. And I release this idea into consciousness, letting it be so, and so it is.